Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tail.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello! Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Holly Fry.
And I am Tracy V. Wilson.
And it's Women's History Month.
It is.
And we've talked about some women already this month, but we're going to talk about some more. And one thing I think that always comes to mind for people when they are thinking about women's history is, or women in history, is the Salem Witch Trials.
Yes.
Which are fascinating and a very rich tapestry of things to explore. But we're actually going to turn back the clock a few decades to a witch trial that happened before the really big onslaught of the Salem Witch Trials, and it happened in East Hampton.
Right, not in quite the New England area that people associate with witch hunts and that sort of vindictive implementation of things.
But it was sort of at the early stage. There were other witch trials happening then. This is in the late 1650s. But as you'll see in this story, not as much of a clear, like, how to handle it mentality as there was by the time things really got rolling in the witch trial arena.
Right. When the witch trials really were underway in Massachusetts, there was a lot of hanging going on.
Yes.
And this, fortunately, to spoil the ending, does not quite go in that direction.
Exactly. There are somewhat surprising results in this one. And what we're talking about is Goody Garlick, who is a woman that lived in East Hampton. And this whole story starts in the spring of 1657 or 1658, depending on which calendar you're using. If you go by the Julian calendar, it would have been 57. The Gregorian calendar, it would have been 58, because the British did not switch over to the Gregorian calendar until the mid-1700s. And in the Julian calendar, March 25th was the new year. So these events happened prior to that. So you'll sometimes see them listed as 57 and sometimes as 58. It's just depending on where the source material...
Which calendar
Yeah, which
following.
Calendar they went by. So George Dewin wrote a really great piece for the New York Archives talking about this particular incident. But also he kind of characterizes the times, particularly in East Hampton, as it being a very gossipy, whispery, innuendo-laden society.
Yes, it put into context, it was a tiny, tiny community. There were 34 families living in East Hampton at the time. They were relatively isolated. The community was only about 10 years old.
Yeah.
Still trying to get a foothold, really, and establish themselves as a community, which led to the unfortunate side effect of it also being very backbitey and gossipy, and people being angry at their neighbors for one thing or another.
Exactly. And if you look at the town records for this time, one, you can get really lost because they just were so wonderfully meticulous about notating everything that was happening. But you'll see that there was a lot of discord among the citizens. And they often played out in the way of official complaints. They had set up this sort of structure where you could go and complain that you were shafted and did not get the right amount of corn that you had been promised, or, you know, that this piece of land that was in dispute, they would officially complain so that that was all on record. And they really were very detailed about, you know, including all of these arguments over property, money, legal claims as part of the town history.
Right. I sort of imagine it as like a long-ago version of today's homeowner associations and all the squabbling that can go on there, with the difference being that normally the homeowners association is not going to put you to death if you were found guilty of not painting your door the right color.
We would hope. And so Goody Garlic was the wife of Joshua Garlic. Her name was actually Elizabeth. Goody is actually a term similar to the way we would use Mrs. today. It's short for good wife, and it kind of is a way that was often used to refer to normally married women, the wife of the good wife part being the clue there, who were not particularly high status. It's not necessarily a derogative term, but it was just a very common way to
right.
refer to any woman. So as we go through this story, you'll hear a lot of people being referred to as Goody, and that is what that means.
Yes. And she was about 50 when this whole event took place.
Right. And it all sort of was catalyzed by one tragic event. And it's interesting, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later, that this event actually doesn't always show up in the tellings of the Goody Garlic story. One of the historians in particular that I read a lot of her work around it mentions that she got interested because she had gone on a tour and heard sort of the really glossy version of it. And then she knew it seemed like too sort of easy and packaged. And so she started looking at various historians' accounts of this entire episode and how it played out. And there's really a lot of variety to it. And she draws some interesting conclusions, and we'll link to her research in the show notes, about why this particular event that really catalyzed it kind of gets lost. But so it starts out with a young girl by the name of Elizabeth Gardner Howell. She was married to Arthur Howell, and she was only 16, and she had recently become a mother. She had had a daughter, and in the days following the child's birth, she became quite ill. She, in fact, had a fevered episode in which she cried out, "A witch, a witch, now you are come to torture me because I spoke two or three words against you. In the morning you will come fawning." And that all sounds very odd and sort of awkward to the modern ear.
Right.
But that's actually recorded. It's part of that quote is part of the transcripts from the hearings that eventually happened.
So a neighbor saw this happen.
Yes, he had come to check on her. She was home alone with the child. He had actually come to speak to her husband, Arthur, but who was out and happened to witness this episode.
Yes, so his name was Samuel Parson. He saw this happen and became worried that she was bewitched.
Yes. And in the meantime, Elizabeth's mother, Mary Gardner, who lived very nearby, again, tiny community, so everyone kind of lives very close.
It was basically a street with a row of houses on either side.
Yes.
When it boils down to.
Yes. And most accounts will sort of mention the elder Gardner's home as being just across the street. So she was very close. So Mary Gardner was ill at the time, and Elizabeth's father, Lion Gardner, who was a very prominent man in the town, and he factors in a lot as the story develops, left his wife's bedside to go to his daughter's house because he had been sent for, and he was so worried about her, the behavior that was being described, and he witnessed the frantic behavior and her claims of witchcraft. And Elizabeth Gardner Howell actually claimed to have seen Goody Garlic, her neighbor, and a black figure in her room, which if you were to hear somebody say that, that would be troubling.
Yes.
That they are seeing these visions of a person and a specter that the person has brought with them to torment you in a room, that would be troubling.
Yes. So eventually her mother Mary was well enough to visit. She crossed the street and started trying to comfort her daughter, saying that she was having bad dreams. But Elizabeth really insisted that Goody Garlic had bewitched her. She was quite sincere on this point.
Yes.
That was what was going on.
She was adamant and completely believed that was happening. That evening, or an evening related to that, three women of the town were watching over Elizabeth. And Elizabeth started to address Goody Garlic, who was not with them physically.
As though she were in the room.
Yes. And she says, "Ah, Garlic, you jeered me when I came to your house to call my husband home. You laughed and jeered me, and I went crying away. Oh, you are a pretty one. Send for Garlic and his wife. I would tear her in pieces and leave the birds to pick her bones." And she went on, because the women that were there with her, watching over her, questioned this outburst and asked her, you know, why is she saying these things? And she replied to them, "Did you not see her last night stand by my bedside ready to pull me to pieces? She pricked me with pins and she brought a black thing to the foot of my bed." So she thought not only was she bringing a black specter into the room that no one else was seeing, but that she and the specter were actually pricking her with pins.
Yes.
So slightly troubling again, and very adamant. I mean, she really felt strongly that this was actually happening to her.
Right. She later had a coughing fit, which the women who were looking after her tried to calm using oil and sugar, which was an alleged treatment for witchcraft. And at that point, Elizabeth allegedly coughed up a pin. Two different women witnessed that a pin fell out of her mouth after she had this coughing fit.
Yes. And that does come up later on. Again, they testify that they saw this happen. There is no clear, definitive account of how that actually happened. If it happened for real, if it was sleight of hand, if the women were fibbing later on. But there is testimony on the record that they saw this pin come out of her mouth. So that night, Goody Simons stayed the night with Elizabeth. She slept there in the bed with her to watch over her. And at the same time, Arthur Howell, the husband of Elizabeth, another neighbor, William Russell, and the gardener's slave, her parent's slave, watched over the sleeping women. And they kept hearing weird sounds throughout the night that were not explained. There was one in a fireplace. There was one that was under the bed. But they could never locate the source of the noise. And Elizabeth would wake up periodically and claim that she was being pricked with pins. And unfortunately, Elizabeth did not recover ever. She got worse and worse. Her fever worsened and she passed away on February 23rd of 1657. Again, if we're going by the Julian calendar.
Yes. Her baby, though, survived, even without her mother there to breastfeed her.
Yeah.
Which, did you find whether they were able to find a wet nurse or?
I never saw any account of how the baby was taken care of in that regard. I know she did. Legally, the documents were quickly drawn up to say that she was staying with her father. It would be unusual for a baby without a mother to survive at the time, but she did, and she went on to lead, by all accounts, a pretty standard, normal life.
Okay.
But yeah, I wondered too, and I didn't find any hard evidence or accounts one way or the other of how the baby was nourished from that point on.
Right. It seems most likely that probably they found someone else in the community who also either had a child or had had a child.
Which was very common, and that will actually come up later in the story regarding someone else.
Yes.
So a hearing was underway pretty much immediately, and by some accounts, the calendar gets a little weird because I did see some that suggest the hearing had actually started even before Elizabeth had passed. But verifying that was a little bit tricky. The dates don't always match up. But it was within a couple days, so it is conceivable that they could have started investigating these allegations since claims were already being made about Goody Garlic being implicated in the illness of Elizabeth. So the investigation had already begun by the time Elizabeth had passed and really kicked into high gear. And they wanted to determine at that point if she had been murdered, and if so, if witchcraft had been involved. Because both of those things were punishable by death. And I feel like we should do a quick side note and mention, again, in modern times, we talk about witchcraft and we look at it as a quaint belief of times past, but it was a very real fear for this community at this time. And it was not uncommon for people in general to be afraid of the dark arts.
Right. Or so, to use the dark arts to explain otherwise unexplainable things.
Correct. So it, it really was something that was taken very, very seriously. When someone was accused of something like that, it was investigated just as we would investigate any allegation today of a criminal nature. So this hearing, though, was interesting because it was the first witchcraft hearing in East Hampton. There had been others in New England already, but East Hampton had never dealt with this subject before on a legal level. And a hearing began, and three village justices presided over it. They were John Mulford, John Hand, and Thomas Baker. And there is also some discrepancy about how many witnesses actually testified. Most sources cite 11, but the New York Archives telling of the story does mention 13 witnesses. So just keep that in mind. Just in terms of volume, it seems like 11 is the more accurate, but the archivists are usually very careful with their numbers. So
right.
It could just be a matter of someone accounting differently in historical records.
And that's a pretty significant portion of the population of the town at that time.
Yeah. Either way, you're close to a third,
right,
whichever number happens. According to one text, like I said, there were 11. But most interesting are that three people that never testified that were very, very involved. One is Lyon Gardner, the deceased's father. One is Goody Garlick. She never came forward to defend herself. She didn't speak up to do so.
I wonder if she was given the options to do so.
It seemed like she was, mm-hmm. and she just wasn't interested in addressing any of these accusations. And the other is a woman named Goody Davis, who will come up again as we go forward. The only person who wanted to defend Goody Garlick was her husband, which is interesting, you know, that no one would come forward to speak on her behalf. Because there are some accounts also that say that she had friends in very high places, which will figure into the lore as we go forward and how this kind of gets absolved later on. But if that were the case, you would think more people would come forward to defend her. But again, dealing with a very fearful subject that was not always easily explainable. So, going into this hearing, they used a 7-point system of criteria for determining the presence of witchcraft.
And this list is so intriguing to me, because so many of them are really what we've sort of mentioned a couple of times. Is something tragic happens that you can't really explain witchcraft.
Yeah, it's like, is it unexplainable?
Yeah, witchcraft.
It must be witchcraft.
So point one, for example, when a healthful body shall be suddenly taken without probable reason or apparent natural cause. So basically, when someone dies without an obvious cause,
right,
it was previously healthy.
Right. And Samuel Parsons' testimony of Elizabeth's, the sudden onset of Elizabeth's illness, easily met this requirement. The next one is when the afflicted party, in his fit, tells truly what the witch or other absent parties are doing or saying or the like. So, again, kind of odd, because it's basically at that point there's no way to verify.
Right.
They're just saying...
It's what someone said.
Right. You're taking someone's word for it, who may or may not be ill from fever at that point or some other affliction. And several witnesses had heard Elizabeth mention the black specters being pricked with pins, Goody Garlick being in the room when she wasn't actually there physically for other people to see. So that was met very easily.
The third was when there was a supernatural strength such that a strong man or two shall not be able to keep down a child or a weak person upon a bed. Arthur Howell described the ways that Elizabeth would try to strike out at the black figures and how he couldn't hold her in his grasp when she tried to do this. So even though she was very ill, when she was trying to fight back against these specters that she saw, her strength appeared to be more than it should have been considering her physical condition at that point.
The fourth one is when the parties shall do strange things or say strange things, and yet when out of their fits know nothing of what they did or said. So there was plenty of strange behavior in all of the witness accounts. But according to one scholar, she makes an interesting point that nevertheless, and I'm quoting at this point, nevertheless, none of the testimony clarifies whether her delirium was punctuated by moments of clarity in which she was unaware of what she had said or done. So we're not sure if that part of the criteria was actually really focused on at that point.
Right.
But we do know that she definitely had fits.
Yes. The fifth point, when a party doth vomit up crooked pins, needles, nails, coal, lead, straw, hair, or the like. Lots of foreign objects in that list. And we had the two women who we spoke about previously testifying that they saw a pin fall out of Elizabeth's mouth after she had a coughing fit.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The sixth is when the party shall see visibly some apparition, and shortly after some mischief shall befall him. Goody Simons testified about Elizabeth's visions of black things in the room, and her rapid decline in health was already well established since many people had witnessed her going from fairly okay to really, really ill in a very brief period of time.
The seventh point was when two or more are similarly taken in strange fits. So basically when more than one person in the community is having the same experience. There were two witnesses who backed Goody Simon's claim that she had had fits after seeing specters. And the garlic's black cat was implicated as a specter figure.
Yes, so Goody Simons had said she had seen the black cat and then shortly after either had fits or her fits had gotten worse after seeing the animal.
Yes.
So all seven of those criteria were met easily during testimony. And then in the midst of all of that testimony, there were additional accusations made against Goody Garlic. So in addition to those seven criteria having been met by witness testimony easily, additional accusations were made as part of that testimony, and they sort of formed a bigger dossier of what people perceived to be witchcraft behavior around Goody Garlic. It was claimed that she caused four other deaths, one an unidentified man, one a black child, and two infants. They said that at one point she poisoned an infant with cursed milk. As we had just mentioned, Goody Simons claimed that she had fits because of Goody Garlic. There was a litter of piglets that died after the sow had a very unusual birth, which was attributed to her. And in one point, an ox had broken its leg suddenly, and her husband, Goody Garlic's husband, Joshua, is also implicated here because he had apparently uttered some threats in a disagreement with Lion Gardener, who owned the ox and was the father of Elizabeth, who had just died, shortly before it happened. So they had had a verbal dispute, and then suddenly the ox's leg was broken.
Right.
So once witchcraft was established to have been involved, the next section of the hearing is meeting the criteria to prove that the accused was the perpetrator of that witchcraft. So
there are three rules, or three criteria, that the accused had appeared to the sick party in his or her fits, that the afflicted was able to name the suspected witch, and that the afflicted could describe the witch's actions, all of which has happened in what we've described so far.
Right. So the existing testimony that met the first seven criteria also pretty cleanly wrap up this portion of it as well. So at that point, things are not looking great for Goody Garlic.
No.
So one thing that's interesting is historian Loretta Orion, who I've mentioned some of her work previously in this episode, is that many of the histories of the East Hampton area mention the trial of Goody Garlic, but Elizabeth Gardner Howell's death is really not part of it. The charges tend to be pretty general, about Goody bewitching neighbors with herbs, ruining crops, sending her specter cat after people. They're kind of more what we would think of today as pretty standard witchy behaviors of the time.
Right.
You know, the things that we think of historically as what people were accused of. And somehow Elizabeth's death is really not as focused on as the catalyst for this trial as it was. And Orion postulates that part of that is because the Gardner family was very, very important in the area, and they really laid down a lot of the groundwork for the community, and that they maybe didn't want their family name associated with all of this. And that some, because there are still members of the Gardner family descendants there that, you know, give tours that are part of this. And
right.
So Orion is postulating that they just kind of want to keep the family name out of it.
Right. Well, and it was one of those tours where, as we talked about earlier, about, you know, hearing the story while on a tour, like it was one of those tours of one of the old family properties that she heard about the story for the first time, right?
Yeah, that really catalyzed her interest in it, and really sussing out the truth in all of the various histories. And because the community was very, very small, the Garlics had dealings with everyone, and some of them, you know, involved disagreements, but all of them, of course, came into focus at this time. And because there is, at that point, so much information about it, that's kind of what informs a lot of the historical writings about it, that give Goody Garlic more of a general witchcraft accusation rather than the specificity of a murder. One thing that comes out that's very interesting as you read this is there is an alternate villain in this story as we look at it kind of from our perspective.
Right.
And that's Goody Davis, who is this woman who clearly did not like Goody Garlic, and she felt that she had been personally wronged by her. And much of the testimony against Goody Garlic, even though Goody Davis never testified, it kind of came to light that it could all be tracked back to stories that Goody Davis had told people.
Right. So Goody Davis had lost her own baby after what she claimed was Goody Garlic casting the evil eye on it. The story is that Goody Garlic had noted that the baby was ill, saying the child is not well, for it groaneth. And later, after she said those words, the baby didn't open its eyes or make noise ever again, and it died 5 days later. And Goody Davis, her point of view was that this was an act of witchcraft or the evil eye from Goody Garlic.
So an interesting element comes into the story here regarding the Gardner family. Because allegedly, the day that this testimony came up in the East Hampton hearing involving Goody Davis believing that her child had been cursed by Goody Garlic, servants of Lion Gardner, a good man Vale and his spouse, claimed to have heard Lion Gardner say, and remember, this is the father of the girl who has just died, and I quote, "Goody Davis had taken an Indian child to nurse for a little wampum and had starved her own child to death." So someone with a pretty serious stake in seeing justice done, or vengeance if he really believed this woman had killed his daughter, was actually speaking out against the women that were accusing Goody Garlic and saying, "Oh no, you brought that on yourself." Although, again, he did not officially testify in the trial. These were things that his servants overheard him saying.
Right.
And they reported back to other people. So it establishes Lion as very even-tempered and being a voice of reason, even in, you know, the depths of grief over losing his daughter. And in some versions of the history, it's even suggested that Lion Gardner is actually a friend of Goody Garlic and that they have a pretty good relationship and he actually wants to protect her. We do know that Goody Garlic worked for him at one point, but there's no real clear documentation that they were really any more than that, you know, neighbors and friends. I mean, there are even disputes in that long public record that I mentioned earlier between the Garlics and the Gardeners, but really there are disputes amongst almost every single family. Like, you could do all of the possible permutations of family to family amongst the 34 that live there, and each of them have had some argument at some point in time that was documented. So,
right. I still keep imagining it as a 17th century condo association, and everyone squabbling with everyone all the time.
It did appear to have a lot of squabbles. And at this point, there is another interesting development, which is that the case moves on. The judgment is not handed down there in East Hampton.
No, they decided to send it to Hartford, which had more experience in dealing with charges like this. There was some trepidation on the parts of the magistrates about ruling in a case that had such serious consequences for the accused, which, considering the lore of witch hunts, is pretty level-headed. Like, when you read transcripts of witch trials and sort of read accounts of towns in which a big witch trial became the central focus, there tended to be a lot of hysteria and a lot of rush to judgment. And this is really like, we need to give this case to someone else who has more experience, considering the ramifications that might come down.
Yes, and it does make me wonder if some of that is just based on the fact that it is such a small community and they do all know each other. Like, if they have a sense of the level of import of each person in that community, or if they just were that level-headed generally. And we don't know. So Baker and Hand were then dispatched to Connecticut. They were two of the magistrates that had heard the hearing there in East Hampton, and they were bringing Goody Garlic to her trial there in Hampton, or in Hartford, rather. They were also finishing up negotiations to make East Hampton part of the Connecticut colony, so there was a double intent there in their travels. And Lion Gardner was actually part of the party, but records indicate he did not have any involvement in the Garlic case at that point. He was just there to assist with the Connecticut negotiations.
So there's some haziness and some inconsistency at this point. There are accounts that claim that there was no Hartford trial at all, and that Gardner used his influence to spare the Garlics from what was likely to happen, which was that Goody Garlic would be executed. But there are also records of the case being heard by Governor John Winthrop Jr. and his six other magistrates, as well as a 12-man jury.
So we mention that mostly because, there really are government documents, government records that indicate that this trial did happen. But again, it goes back to that sort of desire to do very glossy versions of history. There are many accounts that really seem to firmly believe that that trial never happened, which is kind of interesting. And so the indictment against Goody Garlic that accompanied her to Hartford reads, Elizabeth Garlic, thou art indicated by the name of Elizabeth Garlic, the wife of Joshua Garlic of East Hampton, that not having the fear of God before thine eyes, thou hast entertained Satan, the great enemy of God and mankind, and by his help since the year 1650, hath done works above the course of nature to the loss of lives of several persons with several other sorceries, and in particular the wife of Arthur Howell, for which, according to the laws of God and the established law of the Commonwealth, thou deservest to die.
Yeah, so we don't really have a lot of record of what actually transpired in this court. So we don't know what really happened in the courtroom. We don't really know if Goody Garlic testified. We just know that an event happened at which there was a trial.
Yes. There has also never been any record of whether a witch's mark was ever found on her, which was pretty common for women who were jailed as witches to have their bodies searched pretty thoroughly for such a thing. And there's never any record of one of those having been found. We don't know if that ever happened to her, but it was such a common practice that it would have been more unusual if it had not happened for her to have been pretty thoroughly examined. But here's the interesting thing. The findings of the court are as such. This was actually the judgment that they sent to the town of East Hampton, along with some other documents, which we'll talk about in just a moment. And it reads, the jury doth not find Elizabeth, the wife of Joshua Garlic, guilty according to the indictment. Joshua Garlic of East Hampton, for himself and wife Elizabeth, doth acknowledge himself bound to this commonwealth in a recognition of 3011. We'll come back to what that is. That he and his wife shall carry good behavior to all the members of this jurisdiction until the court at East Hampton in September or October next, and that they will then and there personally appear if he till that time continues his habitation upon the island, but if he shall remove his dwelling to the main within this jurisdiction, then they here shall personally appear at the quarter court in Hartford on the first Thursday of September next. So what that actually means is that Joshua actually had to pay a bond to ensure that his wife would behave going forward. Like, they didn't find her guilty, but they also found her still suspicious. So,
not guilty, but still suspicious.
It's kind of like they have to do parole hearings, even though she was never
imprisoned.
Well, she was in
prison,
but
she
was not found guilty.
Right.
And that they had to check in with the court, either in East Hampton, or if they moved off of that island to the mainland, they would have to go to Hartford from time to time. So yeah, they didn't find her guilty, but also not quite not guilty. But this was a surprisingly conservative approach. There had already been witches tried in Hartford that had been found guilty and had been put to death. So it's very, very interesting that this happened. And the absence of testimony and the accounts of what actually happened at the trial has kind of created this nice little hotbed for speculation.
Right. I really wish that we had those. Because
many people really wish that we had those.
Like, when you look at the criteria and what went on in East Hampton, it seems like, from the point of view of witchcraft trials at the time, to be almost an open and shut case.
Yeah,
based on the way those generally went down.
The deck was definitely stacked against her at that point. So that's one of the reasons kind of this mythology around Lyon Gardner has grown up through the years, is that people have filled in those blanks with him, you know, kind of swooping in almost deus ex machina-like and doing some wonderful thing that spared her at that point. But we don't know. What we do know is that Governor John Winthrop sent a letter to East Hampton along with that verdict, commending the community for their Christian care and prudence, and that's a quote, in examining and handling the case. And he also included in that letter the declaration of acceptance of the town into the Connecticut government. So the two things that were happening at the same time got lumped in one letter together. He also included a bill for the cost of jailing and trying Goody Garlic, which is kind of funny. If you read the letter, he's kind of like, and by the way, fine attached, you owe us a little bit of money. Now, in the meantime, Joshua Garlic actually filed a suit for defamation against Goody Davis, who, as we mentioned, a lot of the testimony that came up was tracked back to gossip and rumors she may have started. It is worth noting that defamation suits were pretty common when it came to settling differences at the time. Like I mentioned, all possible permutations of family to family had at some point in time had some disagreement or argument that is recorded in the town records. So it's not completely uncommon, but what's sort of an interesting coda is that Goody Davis actually died shortly after this, like within a couple of weeks. So she was never really brought to any sort of accountability for any of her actions, and I, you know, don't think the defamation suit really went anywhere.
No. And it's sort of become a legend now, as many things do. A local legend in which the story that people tell sort of has a kind of glossy finish of what originally happened, but skips over a lot of pertinent details. In the legend-based tellings of the story, Lion Gardener gives the Garlicks a cottage on his own land for them to live the rest of their lives in.
And we know that the Garlicks did return to East Hampton, and they did live out their lives there. But there's a record of one cottage on Gardner's Island where Goody Simon actually lived, but there is no such record of a Garlick house. However, they did live there in East Hampton, Goody and Joshua, into their 90s.
Which is so old for the time.
I know. There is a record of Joshua's death, but there's no written account of his wife's passing. So we're not sure exactly when she died. I have seen written that one died at 92 and one died at 94, but I wasn't able to verify that. But most historians agree that they did live into ripe old age and presumably died of natural causes there. So that's the story of Goody Garlick. She's one of the few people who was tried as a witch and sort of lived to tell the tale, although she didn't seem to say much about it. But she did survive it and go on to lead more or less a normal life for the rest of her days.
Yeah.
Which is so unusual.
Really extremely unusual.
But part of that, again, she probably benefited from having been on the early part of the wave of witchcraft fear and having been in a small enough community that they really were trying to take their time with the hearing and the decision of it.
Right. Well, and a lot of the sort of big name witchcraft trials in the United States happened a little further.
About 35 years later and a little bit north. Yeah.
North of there and a little bit later. You went down a rabbit hole of like archival records with this episode. I went down a rabbit hole of trying to find out for sure whether Goody Garlick is the namesake of Magrat Garlick in the Discworld books by Terry Pratchett. She is a witch who factors heavily into many of the books that they're known as the witch books. There's sort of several plot lines that the Discworld books follows, and one of them is about a trio of witches, and Magrat Garlick is one of them. I love her.
I would not be surprised if there were some inspiration drawn.
Well, and he definitely names a lot of his characters after either historical figures or sort of a lampooning way of coming up with neat names for somebody. Cut Me Own Throat Dibbler is the, like, a shuckster who sells bad stuff, for example. So I went hunting for whether Goody Garlick is the source of Magrat Garlick's name and did not find a clear authoritative source on that. But I'm going to now believe that she is.
She's a fascinating story. So that is the tale of Goody Garlick and her trial that went much better than most did.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hello! acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I believe you also have listener mail.
I do. This is from listener Beth, and this is actually from a podcast before you and I were doing it, but it's really good information for people to have. She says, hello, I just listened to the Unearthed in 2012 podcast. As a pre-Columbian art historian, I just couldn't let two things go, especially two things I try to beat into my students' heads. The first is about the temples. You said that the Maya tore down and covered their temples. That is incorrect. The Maya rarely tore down a temple. They simply built over old ones, often protecting the earlier temple with some sort of fill. I describe it to my students as the layers of an onion. The second point is about the word Mayan. It is frequently misused. Mayan, with the N on the end, only should be used when referring to the language. Example, Mayan hieroglyphics. Any other time you talk about the Maya, whether it be the people, culture, religion, architecture, art, etc., use the word Maya. This misuse of the word is one of my biggest pet peeves. That being said, I really enjoy the podcast, especially for long runs. Thank you, Beth. That's really good information people to have, because I know I have done it before. I'm sure many, many other people have.
Right. I need to go on a quest on the website to make sure the website uses it correctly in all times.
Yes. That could be tricky. We're going to have some work ahead of us.
Maybe so.
But that's cool. We can edit, which is one of the wonderful things about online content. If you would like to write to us with insights and knowledge, you may know things about Goody Garlic that we did not uncover. You can do so at historypodcast@discovery.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @MissedInHistory or on Facebook at facebook.com/historyclassstuff. If you want to learn a little bit more related to the topics we talked about today, you can go to our website and type in the word Salem in the search bar. And one of the articles that comes up is, were the American colonists drugged during the Salem witch trial? And it's a really fascinating examination of, I believe it's called ergot poisoning, which is
yes.
a fungus that can grow on wheat and can cause some very irrational behavior.
It can.
And it's a really cool article. Yes. So if you would like to learn about that or anything else, you can do so at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. As a Netflix member, you can instantly watch TV episodes and movies streaming directly to your PC, Mac, or right to your TV with your Xbox 360, PS3, or Nintendo Wii console, plus Apple devices, Kindle, and Nook. Get a free 30-day trial membership. Go to www.netflix.com/history and sign up now.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.